This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
My next guest, and in line with the previous interview that we've had, here, something I used to do in my younger days. Something I used to do in my younger days when, you know, for all intents and purposes and for selfish reasons, and maybe, but my creative space as well, and I wanted to engage, but I would write poetry. I would write poetry when I was much younger, and I would engage and write. And then I started, you know, finding girls interesting. And then I would write poetry for girls, and it works. It really works. So ask me, it works. Poetry for girls, it works. But I was that dude. I would write, and I haven't stopped writing. I still write today. I write documentaries, and I write various things as well. My next guest is Luleka Mhlanzi, and of course, here's a multi-award-winning performing poet. Performing poet, that's different. Author, actress, MC also. And then, of course, also youth facilitator, creative writer. We're speaking to her and bringing her straight into the conversation, and we're going to be talking about the work she does. But before I do that, let me introduce you to Luleka a little bit.
Confusion strikes, man, this life is tough. Confusion strikes, man, this life is tough. Confusion strikes, man, this life is tough. Confusion strikes, man, this life is tough.
Yeah, this life is tough. Let me bring Luleka into the conversation. Luleka, welcome to Power 98.7. Welcome to Power Perspective.
Hi, Denzel. How are you doing?
I'm really good. Hey, this life is tough.
I can see you did your homework. thank you so much for having me. I greet everyone who listens to Power FM. My name is Luleka.
Yeah, no, we tend to do our homework here, Luleka, here on Power 98.7. So let's just show also how much we've done our homework also. The Beast leading role in the film, the prestigious Cannes Film Festival in 2016, international award-winning short film, The Beast. I mean, you've been around, Luleka.
I have been.
Yeah, but let me start off with a sore point, right?
Okay.
Are you in Pietermaritzburg?
Yes, I am.
Born and bred?
Yes.
Can they fix it, please?
Sorry?
Can they fix it?
Can they what?
Can they fix Pietermaritzburg?
Can they fix Pietermaritzburg?
Yeah, please, man. Those authorities down there. You know, I've been to Pietermaritzburg a long, long time. And the next time I'm in Pietermaritzburg, Luleka, I'm going to look you up. But,
please do.
Yeah.
I also must say, and this is, I hope the mayor of Pietermaritzburg is but I must say it is frustrating even for me to live in Pietermaritzburg, so it's okay.
No, that's what I mean. That's what I mean, Luleka. You know, I mean, I go to Pietermaritzburg because I've got family down there, and I go, and I was there recently for a funeral as well. But like I say, the next time I'm there, I'm going to call. But you know, I've seen it slide over the years. You know, and it's sad that it's just sliding and doesn't seem to be coming back.
Yeah.
Frustrating, like you say.
You know, when I've gotten to explore another country in my journey, in my literary journey, I've gotten an opportunity to go to America. When I came back, it was extremely frustrating to live in Pietermaritzburg.
Yeah.
I was like, what? Because, you know, if like you are born here and you've been here, some things that are even uncomfortable to bear slowly become a norm even in your psyche.
Yeah.
But when you go outside and see how relatively clean other places are.
Don't they know that Luleka Mhlanzi lives there? Like, doesn't the mayor know? Like, need to uplift
you know,
our game.
You I mean, know, you mm, know.
Don't they know? Don't they know?
They do. They do. this is quite a political question you're even asking me, because it would have me shooting at the current empire. Which I've been struggling
with. The emperor is naked.
No, honestly, though, I was even listening to the conversation that you were having with Ubabu Usbusiso. And I was so touched by the question that you were asking him. And Yabu Uti, look, I'm also an artist and I'm in Pietermaritzburg, and there's so much that could really be happening. And looking at this current season, we are going to be voting on the 29th, and everything that is happening, you know, it was just so interesting for me to zoom in.
Let's talk about your poetry for a little bit. You know there's a difference between somebody who writes poetry and we can go and we can find them in the books, and we can, you know, as we go through university or colleges or whatever, there they are, and they're there and they've written great poetry, you know, and then there's the performing poet as well, who gets up on a stage and does things differently. What made you decide that you wanted to be a performing poet, you know, on stage? Was it that you could land your artistry different?
I think I decided as I grew, and already I was a performing poet when I decided deliberately to be a performing poet. I'm not sure if that makes sense. Because when I was first introduced to poetry, I was in grade 7 in primary school, and my teacher was my drama teacher, who gave us a script about saving water, and I was so excited that she assigned a role to me, and she didn't. All she gave me was a poem about saving water, and she was like, "No, so at the end of the play, you recite this poem." So that's my first interaction with poetry. So, and it was performed poetry. And yet, although the poem that she had given to me was from a particular author that I don't remember right now, because I was in grade 7. But I got to perform poetry before I could even write to be published, you know. So as I moved into high school, I was exposed to magazines that would have these sections that involve poetry. I think it would be literary sections, there would be poetry, there would be artist opinions, and so forth. But I was too young to even understand what the opinions would be meaning for me. So I read and enjoyed the poetry. And when I was early in high school, I would perform those poems as though as they were mine. Yes. And I remember in grade 10 is the first time I wrote my own poem. It was about poverty.
So it was real. Life was real.
I'm not laughing because it is funny.
Yeah.
You know, yes, it was about poverty. And that was my first poem. I don't remember how it went, but I do remember the content of the poem.
I can think of a line already, you know, as that poem would be written. Nothing in my skeleton. Nothing in my skeleton. Yeah, I sit, stand at 10. Nothing in my skeleton.
You know what I remember is the style I used to recite in. I was on some poverty. I hate poverty. So it was something like that. And then I grew, like, I got platforms because I was also an organization baby. So I was a peer educator in high school, trying to be in these leadership spaces that are about change, because I do actually come from a disadvantaged background.
Yeah.
So that was my reality, and I did use poetry as a form of expression.
Yeah.
It seemed like a hobby, or feel like a hobby, because I had to do on the other side, and then this poetry thing, and then I was just a part of those societies that were trying to bring about change in the community.
Mm.
Funny enough, even when I went to university,
yeah.
there were still and actually platform got to be many,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I was exposed to more platforms, and it was just a thing that was so visible. While I tried to do what I should be doing, like be in school, finish this, get a job, you know, the nitty-gritty of just generally a general young person, you know.
To move away from that thing called poverty. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, I deliberately decided when poetry was the only basic thing that is putting food on the table.
Yeah.
Because I had gone to university, I did ecotourism management,
I did
business administration, yes. And then, but still, because the mindset that I had from the skills that I had already attained from the resources that were available could only have me think what I needed to become. I needed to be employed, and what I had dreamed to become was a neuropsychologist.
Wow.
So when I was out of university, I tried to apply for jobs, which I didn't get. I have never worked for anybody. And there was always this poetry from high school. So imagine, because I finished my matric in 2010.
Yeah.
So from 2011, the one thing that I've always been able to put food on the table with is this thing that has been like a hobby to me.
Mm.
So, and then I grew into this performance poetry rather. I grew the love of reading more, because obviously coming from the background that I come from, you need to fend for everything. You need to fight to get if really you succumb to the condition, you can easily become almost about nothing.
Mm.
So yeah. So and then that is where my love for literature fell. So I love this. So this is where I am. So I'm doing what is called slam poetry, performed poetry. Yeah. And then the more I realized that I'm actually growing this side. I'm attending a lot of workshops. There are so many opportunities in this literary space I'm finding myself in. I'm getting publishing opportunities. My work is publishable. You know, and then I deliberately decided that I'm going to continue to pursue this as a career. Yes.
Unapologetic about it. Confused, just talk to me about the name Confused Identity. You know, in everything that you've said, I could think it's one thing, and then, you know, maybe when you say something else, I'm like, maybe it's that, and maybe it's that. But the name of that, you know, collective poems by Luleka Mhlanzi, Confused.
I think you mean Confiscated Identity.
Confiscated Identity, yeah. The Confused comes from, you know, I'm looking at all the... Yes, so it's Confiscated Identity. So
Confiscated Identity.
The name.
I think the thing the performance you started with that caused confusion, is the one that is still ringing in your head. But it's okay. Confiscated Identity is my first collection. It's not my first publication. I had already been published in different anthologies. Even internationally.
I was about to say in the States and everywhere else as well.
Yes, but Confiscated Identity was my first full poetry anthology where you find all of my work together, you know, in bulk, basically. Confiscated identity is, to confiscate is to put away, if I can just directly explain it. It is to put away for sometimes security reasons, you know, sometimes when you are in class and you are mischievous, probably playing with your cell phone, the teacher takes
and somebody takes something away from you. Yeah,
absolutely. They confiscate your cell phone until you bring a parent. So I'm using this example because it happened to me.
Until you bring a parent.
Yes. So confiscated identity is basically the person that has been silenced. Because when I grew up, I've always been that girl who was told, you are ugly, you can't have that opinion, we can't listen to you because you are ugly, you are dark, you are too dark, you are white. Yeah. You know, so I've always had a problem with my identity, although I had like a loud personality generally, and I'd like to think I've been like that intelligent child, you know. So usually to put me down, my peers would tell me that they're not satisfied with the way that I look, you know, and it would really hit shame on my confidence then. So confiscated identity is that person that was silenced now speaking through these poems in this anthology, you know. Because anytime I would be raising a point, like it would not even be a matter of me having a quarrel with another girl or somebody else, whereby they would be using it in defense. No, it would be merely, maybe sometimes a teacher had asked the question and I have my hand up, because sometimes I wouldn't be ashamed for being wrong, you know, but I would, I like to interact and participate during a course. So it would be used so much that it was like a lot of people. So it made me believe then, okay, I'm probably then ugly.
which is in essence talks to, you know, that whole aspect of stereotypes which you bring into your work and the beauty of standards. But let's not silence you. Let's not silence you, Lekka. And you're right. I was just thinking of confusion and confusion because I had started with that. And of course it's called confiscated identity. But let's for the audience's sake and the listener's sake, listen to some of your work so that they have a proper understanding.
My strength lies in the shadows of my being. The fading confidence in the collage of my spirit borrowed a voice of a bird that couldn't sing. I am burdened by the yearn of gathering architects of the cosmos to assist my confused hands draw a line between breath and dust, to remind me in my lazy days that the world is running out of time. You can only describe yourself using one word because detail shortens storage of the attention span. Let them know you for who they think you are. Forget not to keep your belongings in the envelope between your lungs. Keep your clothes to yourself and stop defining moments through personality so that memories can remain memories and not as a reflection of the being remembering. The black man has a potion of respect for a body part inherited from a spirit that reincarnates good energy. A pattern of similar time frames hang on the naive walls of history from victories of the past. The story of a black man has become a song, a nice melodious tune with words fading in the air. It is difficult to live and grow in a changing world and be expected to remain the same. Now, before the machine gun roared, sharp spears were ready to poke the enemy because the eye had already led the heart of the master astray. Instead of securing the sacred treasure we hold, we destroy it. Unaware, they cursed the god they told the black man to pray to. In fact, the slave was supposed to pray for the deliverance of the master. If not, tell me, why is it that the god you pray to does not recognize you? Why do you need to remind them of who you are and what you want, or remind them to do with you that which they had planned to when they created you? You who would rather appreciate a picture of the beauty of nature over nature. I sometimes lay in my comfort zone and wonder, why would God be so afraid? Thank you.
Wow. Yeah, I am burdened by the yearn of gathering architects of the cosmos to assist my confused hands draw a line between breath and dust to remind me in my lazy days that the world is running out of time. Wow, Luleka.
Thank you.
Wow, wow, wow. And I mean that is powerful, really powerful. But it just goes on to be even further and more powerful. I've just written down and quoted as that was happening, you know, the essence of that. And then breath and dust, I suppose, breath, life, dust, the other.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Where does that all come from? You know, when you sit down and you write and you engage something as powerful as that, where does it come from?
Denzel, I told you earlier that this is my reality. Mm. What I know about myself is that I don't write about things I don't know.
Mm.
About things I've not seen.
Mm.
Even when I get an opportunity to write your story, right? Say you tell me your story and I write it down, I will still write it from my perspective. Mm. I won't pretend to be you. So I think that is the difference between me and probably other creatives in the creative industry, because to create is to bring to life something that has not existed. But I feel like the times are too tough to create things that are non-existent. Like, we are already living a movie, to not create a movie out of what is our reality. So when I speak of these things, Denzel, like, we can be optimistic about life, okay? We can look at the positivity of things. We can be positive, but in reality, things are not funny.
Mm.
It is not okay.
Mm.
So when I write about these things, I challenge. I grew up in a space, although I was not too endorsed or enforced into religion, but I grew in a community that is quite religious, you know. So obviously, now and again, like, you would go to church, you would try to find, like, as a person, you are in an entire world. There's your mental, there's the spiritual, there's the physical, and so forth, right?
Mm.
So when it comes to feeding that spiritual part, what we have around us is religion, right?
Mm.
So when I write, I look at all of these things that make a person. Things that I understand make me. So I'm looking at my social social life. I'm looking at my relationships, basically, with people, family, when I go out, because I'm an artist now, the people that I engage with, my audience, the general public, basically. And then there's the individual.
Mm.
And then there is what is going on generally in the community that surrounds us. So when I write, I zoom in to the things that my heart aches to see, to see the betterment of. Mm. I don't have the right English to put into the way that I have them in mind. But yes, so I touch into the physicity. Is such a term? I'm not sure. Of a human being, the walking. You can stand up, but you can also, it's not the same to just stand up without even thinking about it and to deliberately stand up.
Mm.
So I try to be deliberate with the things that I do. I try to listen to the things that I think about, to the things that I say to people, to what people are saying to me, because this is exactly where we have lost it in humanity, in communication, in experimenting life in its purity or in its spiritual purity, and experimenting life socially, like with respect and just with that kind of humanity of just seeing each other and just being happy and there for each other, if you know what I mean. Mm. It's like generally people are bitter and people have really gone through so much and there's not enough space to serve as an outlet, you know? Mm. I would also say that I think I'm lucky to have this, the platforms that I get, because I do get very big platforms to just purge and to just speak out and mirror where I come from and what I'm doing. Not that it's always negative, but usually I try to look at what is important now, what is going on now, what is, you know,
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, you've said a lot. In all of that, is there something you want to trigger? You know, what kind of response do you really want? And the emphasis on response. What kind of response do you want to trigger when you write in the way you write, or when you on stage and you read your poetry the way that you do? You know, a lot of people will say, yes, you know, these are the meanings of. But is there certain thing that you want to trigger sometimes, or you know, do those triggers lie in various poems of yours addressing, you know, all the underlying issues?
Okay. Thank you so much for that question. And this is quite a very relevant time to ask such questions about what kind of response am I expecting from people, or if I'm hearing you correctly.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm lucky because, like I told you earlier, that I've been involved in a lot of organization work, right? Mm. So most of the things that I touch involve community upliftment. So even with my poetry, I think first, because when we go to these shows, even I'm sometimes guilty. The way things have changed, you would go to a theater show and you'd still be on your phone, you know? So I think first it is just being attentive. People taking a moment to listen first. And then hopefully, I'm glad the 29th of May is approaching. I'm so glad. Hopefully there would be change, because the reason we are doing what we are doing, I believe to change about anything, something needs to become an idea or an opinion. So I'm coming through with cries. I'm coming through with opinions. I'm coming through with ideas. Ideas, I'm putting them on the table. This is what is going on. It is not okay. It is not funny. What can we do to change? I have this and that. What resource do you have? That is the kind of response I'm looking for, basically. What do you have? How can we collaborate? How can we move forward? How can we fight the empire or the system that is basically against the betterment of its society? I am practically radical because I'm angry, but my intention has nothing to do with rage or anger. Like, I am angry because it is urgent. I'm not sure if this makes sense.
Got you. Yeah.
You know. Yes. Not because I'm saying let us go there and shoot them. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying let us fight. Let us not fight. In fact, let us not fight. Can we just sit together and come up with something that we all agree upon and just run with that? Because it is not funny, I know, for everybody, but I can only speak for people like me because I've only lived a life like mine.
I'm angry because it is urgent. My guest is Luleka Mhlanzi, and I'll tell you about something that is in your poems that's speaks so much to me as well, and it's a small little sentence, but let's hear you first, Lukela.
I cannot begin to imagine how glorious it must feel to be in the center of such a glow. What happened to us? You have always known when the sapphire of your eyes have pierced through my clouds. That is how you taught me how to trust you to help me dance. I learned all of those tricks on how not to fall if it wasn't for you. For some time, I was certain there was something in the air for us. I can still feel the grip of your hand that held all promises of love ribboned in infinity. My breath knows the pace of your heartbeat, beat by beat. You know they were once parallel because of the many times you've raised my hair strands and I had shown you where I had my treasure. Do you remember when my lungs could only take your air because I had problems with trusting my solitude? You know I'm a day's time frame, a puzzled lightning, confused whether I'm here to lighten or frighten my guards. But you know I've been trying to stop the hurricane raving inside my chest, and every time you pressed my spine on the cold wall and fed me promises, I believed you. That is why I stopped breaking up with you, even when I knew that you had skeletons too. You should have not guitared yourself into my chest if you had no intention of making music for my forever. And I should have not looked into your mirror. All it taught me was lies. I object to your wedding today. Not because I want you now. I am more concerned about her. I know your gods too well. I know how to set your crown. Does she know it falls all the time? I've put your stone to rest for a couple of times, and goodness, she has no idea of the ghost she is locking her soul into. Thank you.
Luleka.
Hi, Timber.
Let me start with one of the sentences that I was also just that just pulled me towards
okay.
You. Death is so fond of life. Death is so fond of life. You once said, yeah, and I can relate to that because death has to be fond of life. You know, it has to befriend it in essence. You know, it's like best Chomi. You know,
it keeps coming for it.
Yeah, I'm that Chomi that just keep on like, come over. You know. Wow, Luleka, you've been an absolute privilege to talk to. I'm so honored to talk to you. Actually, I am so taken by your work. Actually, and I'm going to look for all of it and more of it. And I hope that I can find confiscated identity somewhere. And if not, I'm going to call you and say, how do I get one? Yeah, because I need to get one. And
I appreciate that.
Yeah. And please come to Johannesburg and just tell us about yourself and stand on the stage, and we would love you.
I will certainly do that.
Mm.
I will.
Luleka, thank you so much for joining me here on Power Perspective.
I appreciate it so much, Denzel. Thank you for having me. I was listening to, remember I told you, your interview with Mr. Mashilwane. I love his work.
Yeah.
And I was just so touched and appreciated that my interview is just after that one.
Mm.
And I love jazz. You were speaking of him again. Let me still rest in peace. So I truly, truly in my spirit deeply appreciate the time I've spent with you here. And thank you. Thank you even for the validation of my work.
Mm.
And just also giving me the opportunity and platform to purge, to speak out, and to engage.
Mm.
It's really been wonderful. You will definitely find my work. Only confiscated identity for now.
Yeah.
You email me. My email address is online. It's all over. If you search Luleka Mhlantsi.
Sure.
Anywhere you will find. Yeah. That is how you get my anthology for now. But other work, I mean, 15 publications.
Mm.
You can definitely go to any bookshop or any library, ask for works that involve Luleka Mhlantsi.
Yeah.
You'll find it.
And when I'm in Pietermaritzburg or I'm driving through, I'm going to say, hey, are you around? And you know, like, can I get a picture, please?
Please do. I'll appreciate it.
Luleka Mhlantsi, thank you so much. That's Luleka Mhlantsi from Pietermaritzburg. And, of course, telling us about who she is.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.